Well, good morning, happy Thursday, and particularly happy New Year. Hope you had a wonderful holiday season, but enough is enough, and now it's back into reality, and that includes the reality of perspectives here on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's so good to have you at the other end of the radio waves, the telephone lines, the Twitter machine, the email device, and all the multiplicity of ways we have to communicate with each other nowadays, and that includes the old-fashioned phone at 414-1234, our local number. If it's long distance from you to us, 800-926-8809. Email perspectives@wfsu.org, or you can send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. Hey, have you been following at all any of the run-up to the Florida legislative session that begins next week? Elections, you know. That's why we moved it up 2 weeks. A couple years ago, the legislature voted on even years, it would be January, February, and on odd years, it would be the traditional March and April. You've probably heard a lot about some of the things that are coming up, such as proposed tax cuts and prison reform and possibly dropping the current requirement for auto owners to have personal injury protection insurance and all of those kinds of things. But the state of Florida's children and seniors, now, that's an issue that transcends just about any individual lawmaking session, as well as the people who come and go in the legislature and the governor's mansion and all that. So we wanted to, at the outset of this year here on Perspectives, to get a handle on a couple of things that are coming up during the first month of this legislative session and how it impacts not just the statewide perspective, but also us here in the Capital Region. So we have a phenomenal panel to talk about these issues and the observances that are going to be part and parcel of this first month of the session upcoming. So let's say hi first to Jason Zaborski. He is Children's Week and Senior Day Coordinator. They let you do two things then, right?
Yes. Thank you so much for having us here, and we're excited to share with you some of the activities we have planned for 2016 and the upcoming session.
We'll get into that in greater detail, but thanks so much, Jason. Ted Granger returns to these microphones after an absence of many, many years. I remember, Ted, it was God, it must have been back in 2006, 2007, we got together here to talk about similar kinds of things here on Perspectives. You remain president of the United Way of Florida. Welcome. How long have you been in that slot?
I've been there about 20 years now, longer than I ever thought anyone would want me, Tom. So thanks for having us. It's good to see you again.
And in contrast to like United Way, the big band and all that, you are the overseer, although not the coordinator and the controller of all the different United Ways across Florida.
Correct. We have 32 United Ways across the state that raise about $250 million to provide funding to our agency partners across the state, almost 1,000 of them that provide services from everything from prenatal care to hospice.
And a lot of wonderful folks involved in those programs, too. Tons of volunteers, you guys.
For sure. So.
And finally, it's a hello once again to our good friend Jack Levine, founder of Four Generations Institute, and kind of the coordinator, the mastermind, the Svengali of this gathering here today. Jack, happy New Year to you, and thanks for putting this together. What's this really all about? What are we going to be talking about?
Well, Tom, thank you. And los tres amigos are sitting here feeling that we have both anticipation, a little bit of anxiety, but we're very, very pleased to celebrate the uniting of forces because we don't do politics. None of the three of us do politics. We do policy. And there's an intersection between politics and policy. And that is the gathering of the forces who have a stake in the game, whether it be an individual parent who has a child with a unique ability. It could be a family member who is worried about the care of their elder as the elder declines. And, you know, there's an old political phrase that smart politicians know where there's a parade and get in front of it. And we're in the parade building business. The 20 years of Children's Week, now the second year of Senior Day, and of course Ted's anchor, which is the community-based givers who supplement but certainly don't supplant the dollars that are needed from state and federal sources. So the big picture is what are we going to invest in, what are the outcomes, and how do we take care of those with most needs because, frankly, sometimes they have nowhere else to turn than the community.
Well, Jason Zaborski, when you come to something like the 21 years of Children's Week and now the second year of Senior Day here at the legislature, you are amongst, let's face it, an awful lot of other kinds of outreach and high profile events, whether it's FSU Day at the Capitol, or we're going to bring up the paella from South Florida, or have the world's largest key lime pie from Monroe County. And it's easy to get lost amongst all of those things since it's always a wild whirlwind at the Capitol. How do you kind of push your thing up so that they at least pay attention to what you're trying to say?
Well, we've grown Children's Week over the many years. I mean, I think everyone does know the signifying activity of hanging the hands in the state capitol. So lobbyists, legislators are made aware that it's Children's Week when they walk into that building, and the capitol is adorned with hundreds of thousands of paper cutouts of children's hands hanging there. But Children's Week has grown to more than that, I think, with the numerous activities we've allowed for young people to get involved with becoming advocates, and older, Floridians to get involved too with advocating for their issues. So hosting town hall meetings, hosting legislative workshops and advocacy workshops throughout that day, and really creating this to be an open to the public event, an activity that children and families and seniors and families can come together. And it's not just a standalone day for the realtors' day where they have all their lobbyists coming up. This is really an event for the public and for people in the community to come up, and maybe the first time coming to the Capitol, seeing the festivities that we sort of have created. And Children's Week has really become the largest event at the state capitol during session. We bring 4,000 or 5,000 people to the Capitol for that one singular day on Tuesday, January 26th this year.
And the following year then is Senior Day.
Correct. So we go back to back. Children's Day, the big day, is the 26th of January, and the 27th is Florida Senior Day. So two very distinct audiences with two, very distinct issues. But, they're both, our most vulnerable populations and the ones we need to protect here in Florida as we go forward. So having these two awareness days at the Capitol allows for, general everyday seniors and children and families to get involved and introduce them to advocacy efforts. And I think that's what Children's Week and Senior Day both do for the state.
Well, the kickoff of the legislative session is next Tuesday officially, and one of the events that is part and parcel of that first day is the Governor's State of the State Address, which we now have confirmed will be taking place at 11 o'clock next Tuesday morning, and followed by the Democratic response from the House and the Senate. And we'll have that live right here on WFSU-FM. But let's get a quick state of the state when it comes to children and seniors around the state. And Ted Granger, I mean, you're in a good position to talk about that. We had the great economic downturn from 2008 that reduced resources across the board in both the public and the private sectors for these sorts of things. We've been struggling back. Where are we now?
Well, this last year actually was the first year that we had climbed back up that economic ladder to where we had the same amount of general revenue as we had 10 years ago. So we really took a nosedive over the last 10 years. Of course, over this last year and this coming year, the money is coming in. We've got over 100 million tourists coming in that are contributing greatly to our general revenue, and the economy is picking up. So the fiscal picture looks good. With regard to human services and to education, facing significant issues as always, and there are big issues that will be. Working with the legislature on this year that range from early childhood and school readiness issues to making sure that we take care of our seniors. We should be on the cutting edge of dealing with our senior population since we have more seniors. And you and I are a couple of them, more seniors in our state than any other state. I look forward to working with the legislature and working with our partners to help ensure that since we have the most, we are on the cutting edge of addressing the issues that everyone else around the country is going to need to address in coming years.
Well, that's right. And Jack Levine, we were talking just before we went on the air about the fact that Florida has now returned to attracting an additional 1,000 more residents per day, which we remember back from the 70s. I mean, that was the mantra. Boy, they're just pouring in like crazy. And then you add that 100 to 110 million visitors, not only helping to swell the state's revenue coffers, but also putting additional stress on infrastructure and those kinds of things. So the need is becoming greater.
Well, the need is greater. We also are a state that we have a great experimental methodology of growing good things and transplanting them to other communities. We're the only state in the nation that has children's service councils, which are voter approved. We have them now in 8 counties. And these are taxes – I'm allowed to say that word in public – which actually invest in model programs for children. And we have to be proud of those, I think, because not only are we the only state, but that those are the incubation of innovation and prevention. You know, we have Healthy Start, which started 22, 23 years ago and now is providing a better than average outcome for our newborns. We have Healthy Families, one of the premier – Ted serves as chairman of the advisory group for Healthy Families under the Cancer Prevention Fund. I mean 98% of the families served by Healthy Families do not have children reported to the abuse neglect system. That's called success. Now, we'd like it to be 100%, but 98% is not bad considering that about $2,400 per family saves – cost avoidance over $60,000 to $70,000 in other costs if the child is abused. We've got guardian ad litem. We invented it in Florida. It's been elsewhere, but we put it under that banner. Now we have 10,000 volunteers coming into the court system and saying, I represent this child's best interest. And talk about advocates, the guardians ad litem under Alan Abramowitz and that great coalition. And we've reformed foster care to a degree that we now have one of the highest adoption rates in the nation and have been rewarded for that. And we have also taken juvenile justice in a whole new direction with a preventative approach rather than waiting and waiting and waiting until the child is more criminal than we'd like him or her to be. We are now investing in civil citations and teen courts and other kinds of early intervention. So we've got a good news story to tell. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that it's perfect and that doesn't mean it's well-funded. So we're just meeting today with a group over at the state college system about campus coaches for our foster kids to get an education. I think that's wonderful. We need to expand that statewide.
So much to talk about here regarding our young folks and our older folks here on Perspectives, which is what we're focused on today as part of our first program of 2016. Your participation welcome as always, 414-1234-800-926-8809 and perspectives@wfsu.org is the email address. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Perspectives on WFSU-FM as we talk about children and seniors and the upcoming festivities at the Florida Capitol, which is not just the fact that Associated Industries of Florida has a big wing ding on Monday night or the fact that you have every florist in town making confiscatory revenue gains from the number of flowers that appear on the desks of the House and the Senate and all that stuff. But it's also an opportunity to focus on some issues that maybe don't get the high degree of visibility that a lot of other kinds of things. I don't want to say sexier because that's kind of, you know, leans it in a different direction. But you hear all this stuff about cutting taxes and now we may have to go without personal injury protection insurance. We're going to revisit that as if that hasn't been a big issue since 1971 or any of these other things. But what happens with the kids and the older folks who comprise such a huge part of Florida's population? That's what we're here to talk about today. So before we get into the phone calls, we see there are calls coming in. Jason Zaborski, let's talk about the actual listing of events, the calendar that's coming up here for both Children's Week and Senior Day at the Capitol.
Sure. For Children's Week and for the listeners, you can go to childrensweek.org to find a full schedule. And really our events and activities start now. We actually have events throughout the state. There's reading events, there's fairs, there's actually a model of event and activity that's taking place with a lot of the early learning coalitions around the state. They've started a storybook village where adults come in and pick a book and they dress in character, create arts and crafts activities and read to kids and provide them with free books. Those events and activities are taking place now throughout Florida, and that's where we collect all the paper cutouts of hands. We also have our social media campaign where, you know, parents and kids and teachers can submit their hand art. It's paper, you know, construction paper and pen and marker and decoration, and they take a picture of it and submit it to us through hashtag Give Us a Hand. And that long line of messages from children and families around the state is shown to legislators when they walk into the Capitol that day. But the day at the Capitol, Children's Week, is several days long. It's not a full week of activities, but the hands hang there for the entire week, starting January 24th, and it goes to January 29th. The 24th is when we actually hang the hands in the state capitol. We have hundreds of volunteers that come up and hang really, you know, tens of thousands of paper cutouts of children's hands in the state capitol rotunda. Anyone's invited to bring their hand art to the capitol that day and join us in that activity. And that sort of kicks off the week. We have a dinner on Monday with a lot of our partners. We have over 130 organizations and sponsors and partners that support this activity, and that's really how this event is able to thrive through the support of our partner organizations, state agencies, and many others, foundations and nonprofit organizations that support this. And we'll have a dinner recognizing, the Floridian who has made a difference in the lives of children and families throughout the state at that event. And we have a Supreme Court Justice and about 400 guests attend that. And sort of it's the prelude to our big day at the Capitol, which is Tuesday, January 26, where we have about 100 different exhibitor booths. All the partners provide interactive activities for children and families. We provide free breakfast, free lunch, free Starbucks coffee, and it will need it this year in January. So keep those hands and hands warm. And
save a grande for me.
So our day is filled with the whole Capitol courtyard is transformed really into a festival-like atmosphere. We have an event, Storybook Village, this year. We'll host. We have over 1,600 children already registered to come through the village. 28 different groups are hosting interactive activities. So it's a fun day to just come up to the Capitol if you've never been to the Capitol, experience what the Capitol can be. And then also we hope that you go visit with your legislators and talk to them about the important issues that you care about. And those are really what I think the stories of Children's Week and with Senior Day really do make a difference, because, you know, having those firsthand constituents and people from the districts traveling from different parts of the state and coming to the Capitol and sharing those with legislators, that's really the power that children and seniors have in this state to make a difference. And, you know, we may not have the most lobbying funds or PAC support, but I think we have, the children and families and the numbers to support, what we really want to see the policies be here in the state of Florida for children and families. So Tuesday the 26th is our big day for Children's Day, and we hope everyone does come out and support it. If you haven't been to the Capitol, it's a wonderful day, and it really does, make the Capitol feel alive.
Yeah, and it always is remarkable when I think of the number of folks who have lived in Tallahassee, many of them all of their lives, and have never been to the Capitol. It's kind of like that's the other world, the alternative existence out there somewhere. And when it comes to lobbying, well, that's what we pay professional lobbyists for. But Ted Granger, this is really grassroots stuff, right?
This is really grassroots. I've got friends in New York City who've never been to the Statue of Liberty, so you know it's very similar. I think what excites me about Children's Week is that it is a festival, it's a celebration, and it provides an opportunity for advocates. But there's also an opportunity to help children and youth get engaged and get interested in the things that we all hope they will be. The Storybook Village that Jason mentioned will have over 20 booths, with each of them reading a book to children, and each of them having people in costumes. The Cat in the Hat will have someone with a Cat in the Hat costume, somebody with and with other themes of books. And we have those 1,600 children and others who come will be able to sit there and hopefully get enthusiastic about reading and understand the vitality and the energy that comes with reading. And then for youth, we have a town hall meeting that where they will actually ask the children and youth cabinet questions. And we pack the room with middle school and high school kids who can really get an idea of what civics is about and what government is about and getting them up to speed on some of the major issues that they're interested in and having them hear from our state leaders.
And there's a big difference between having someone, say, a mid-50s kind of guy and a $2,000 Hickey Freeman suit making his pitch in contrast to a dewy-eyed fifth grader.
Oh, it's phenomenal. The questions that these kids ask, it's great. We really love it. It's one of the highlights of the Children's Week, actually.
They put them on the spot on camera. This is a filmed broadcast, and they ask the toughest questions because they really they want to lay it out there and get their voice heard. So it's an amazing process. We've been doing it for 7 or 8 years now, having this town hall meeting. It's actually evolved to actually form a Florida Youth Commission. So we started as a town hall meeting, and it's now evolved to a youth commission that advises state leaders, secretaries of the different departments on important issues that kids care about.
We've got Reed weighing in here on line one, and we welcome him to Perspectives. Hey, Reed, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Tom. What do you know about $5,000 suits?
I wish I had one, but I wouldn't mind a $500 suit, tell you the truth.
Really? Yeah. If I was with you today, I think in the studio, considering that assemblage you have, I'd be doing a Wayne's World I'm Not Worthy thing. Well done. My question, and I hate to start off sounding cynical, but I've been around here a long time, and I have found over the years that sometimes the legislature is most successful on issues of children and families and seniors when they don't do anything. And I'm wondering, especially when it comes to budgetary questions, which is, of course, their only real constitutional charge, are there things going on that your panelists are concerned about, things we need to be watching for that we need to talk to our legislators about not doing?
Oh, fantastic question, Reed. Yes. First of all, do no harm. Jack Levine, what do you think?
Well, it's always a balance, Reed, and there are a lot of whiners out there, and we want some winners. And what I mean by that is we know what works. We know that the right amount of prenatal care and nutrition for our pregnant girls and women produces a better outcome for that child, which of course is not only a human benefit but a cost savings. To ignore that reality is to ignore what I call the basic needs of families. Similarly, we know that an elder who doesn't want to move to a congregate center but with enough home-based care could be where he or she want to be, that's a very important family issue. And it's not only government but government as a partner to our not-for-profit community agency. So, the budget is the most important policy document that any state, any Congress passes. And it's a question of where are we going to put our $80 billion? Is it an investment in success or is it a payment for failure? And, we have a tradition of doing things too late, too expensive, and not effective. And now we've moved very expeditiously, I think, in the last couple of decades to putting dollars where they really produce good dividends, not only for families but for our state economy. So, Reed, I'm the kind of guy who says let's maximize our research, leverage it with some good business support, some good philanthropic support, and do the right thing. And you know what? It feels good to win when it comes to children and comes to elders, and every family knows that. So it's time that our entire state knows that.
Okay, Ted Granger, not chapter and verse for particular bits of legislation here, but any potential pitfalls that you see may be lurking as far as here might be some misguided areas that we need to be on the lookout for?
Well, as Jack said, you know, the budget is where it's all at. And what we've seen the last 2 years with the legislature is they've passed fewer bills than they have in decades. And that looks like it will be the case again this year. At this point, there aren't a whole lot of bills filed that deal with children and youth. Probably the biggest one, Reed, with regard to the biggest dollar impact is a bill that's been filed by the House Education Committee to implement the provisions of the CCDBG, which is where we get most of our money to fund school readiness programs in the state. It means a couple $200 or $300 million to the state. Representative O'Toole, who chairs the House Education Committee, has got that bill going. We've got to pass that bill or we lose $200 to $300 million. So it's an incredibly important bill for us to pass this year.
Okay, and does it look like there's any really organized opposition to that, or is it going to be one of these? Oh, hey, we can let this one go.
The only thing that could be a problem is what plagued the legislature last year that we hope does not occur this year is just the dysfunction within the institution itself. And hopefully it looks like much of that has been addressed through conversations and talking among those who had differences last year.
You know, the first bill which will pass, that's what all of our friends in the media are telling us, is Senate President Andy Gardner's comprehensive package on what he calls unique abilities. This is both early childhood all the way through the employment of people who have special needs. There used to be some disparaging terms for these folks. They're different than us, negative terms, and now we're moving into a more positive achievement arena with our people who have special needs. And what's stirring about this is not only is the president and his wife Camille the parent of a Down syndrome son, it's a question of what do we really believe about our potential. And it's almost a metaphor for me that I'm meeting children who have hearing impairments, who have sight impairments, who have developmental issues, and they really are achieving as long as we start early, assess early, and then invest in what we know is the technology to help them. President Gardner has been a great, great supporter of this, and I think that's going to be his legacy because when it boils down, we're all in the legacy business, and with term limits, yeah, they only got a certain amount of terms to kind of make your mark. So we're seeing more and more, I believe, more and more of our legislators stepping forward and say, what do I want to be remembered for? And that stirs an advocate's heart.
And not getting into the politics of the situation, but the recent bit of a kerfuffle about children who had persistent medical issues and being excluded from state care. Now that is being readdressed by the Agency for Healthcare Administration. It looks like those kids are going to be brought back in. They will get treatment. And so things can be done even when they seem to veer off course sometimes.
And that's another piece of legislation. We've got the CMS, Children's Medical Services issue, and tied up with that issue to a certain extent is Early Steps, which is a program that serves over 40,000 children 0 to 3 who have identified delays or disabilities. And we all know that we save taxpayer millions and millions of taxpayer dollars if we serve these children and catch those delays early so most of them can progress normally and achieve their full potential. There were some problems that came up with that last year. There's some legislation this year to address it. The legislature put $13 million additional last year, and the governor has included that in his budget. So we're optimistic that that situation will right itself too.
You're listening to Perspectives on WFSU-FM, and a reminder, you can always find us online at WFSU.org. Go to that aforementioned address, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, click Perspectives. Sounds like a lot, but really, piece of cake, no problem. We archive past shows. We try to have the latest program up within a few hours of when it actually airs, and that includes today's program as well. Jason Zaborski is a coordinator of Children's Week and Senior Day. If you had your druthers, kind of here we are, Big Rock Candy Mountain time, what would you like to see?
What would I like to see? Well, I'd really like to see more involvement by legislators in our activities. I think, having them, come out. You know, we bring thousands of people to them. And I think legislators getting more involved in the community, having roundtable discussions in their community, talking to their constituents before they come up to session about what's important to them, and then following through with that. And that, and I think that's what Children's Week and Senior Day is we'd like to see happen going forward, so that when and really when the people come up to the Tallahassee, we're enforcing sort of the things that have been done at the community level, that have been talked about, that have you know, have been aired, and that's what I'd like to see. I'd like to see the legislators become more involved in listening to their constituents about senior and children's issues.
So it sounds like this needs really – the groundwork needs to be laid well in advance of each legislative session. This – Ted Granger, it's got to be a year-round thing, right? We're not trying to start a big lobbying corps here, but just to let your local lawmaker know, hey, here's some things we're worried about, particularly in these regards, and we'd like you to – you know, take a hard look at what you can do to help this.
Absolutely. You know, we live in a republic where these legislators represent us. But, you know, the bottom line is it's all about relationships. Most of what we do in life is all about relationships. And, you know, we always encourage folks that if they have an opportunity just to pick up the phone or drop by the district office at some point during the year. So when legislators are considering issues and they're looking at the spreadsheets and they're looking at the data and they're looking at the dollars, they don't just think about that, because until we personalize our issues, until there's a name behind each of those issues, there's a child who needs early step services who they can say, you know, I met little Bobby. Mm-hmm. It makes a difference instead of just looking at those numbers. So, yes, we always encourage people to cultivate those relationships and use them, because they help.
You know, Tom, this is my 38th year in this work, and what I've learned is so much happens, as Ted says, in a combination of community and statewide. You know, voting is the great equalizer. You know, if you're an 18-year-old and a citizen, you are the same as anyone else if you're registered and you vote. And it almost might seem too simplistic, but we only have 20-30% of folks who are under age 30 who are even registered. Now, that is a very, very bad prescription for our future, because if you don't play the game, it's known. It's public record. And we've got to get legislators attuned to the fact that those who have interests also have a stake in the game.
You're listening to Perspectives on WFSU.org and also WFSU-FM. Give us a call, 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. We'll be right back. Issues for juniors and seniors here on Perspectives today in the run-up to the 2016 Florida legislative session that kicks off next Tuesday, with coverage beginning here at 11 o'clock Eastern Time on WFSU-FM, the governor's state of the state, and the Democratic response immediately to follow. And then we are off and running for 60 days of fun, excitement, thrills, spills, and chills. We've been talking a lot about the kids, but Jason Zaborski, what about Senior Day coming up on the 27th of this month down at the Capitol?
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, Florida Senior Day brings thousands of seniors to the state capitol, and you know, as Ted mentioned, you know, we lead the nation in the number of seniors, you know, in our state, and really the impact of seniors have to our economy, I think, is a very important one, and I think when we talk about, you know, engaging seniors, these are regular voters, these are people that legislators listen to. We talk about children. They sometimes don't have that same power that seniors have. So engaging and electrifying really seniors in this state to have their voice heard and to go out there and talk to their legislators in their communities, and then come up to the state capitol to advocate on those issues and make sure we hold, you know, our legislators and our elected officials accountable is really kind of the goal of Senior Day. And again, we have you know, over 100 different partners that support this effort, from AARP all the way down to the small advocate groups that work on specific issues. And really, Senior Day is a platform for all those groups to talk about their specific issues to the legislature and have them viewed. So we have Again, sort of a free breakfast, free lunch, free coffee. Thousands of health, you know, thousands of seniors come up. We provide them free health screenings. We have a town hall meeting. You know, similarly to what we do with Children's Week, where we have seniors asking those important issues to the policymakers. And putting those folks on record for where they stand on issues. And I think, you know, this year we're really excited. The Florida Department of Elder Affairs and United Way of Florida have really, you know, organized, I think, a spectacular event for seniors. And I hope people, you know, take advantage of this opportunity to come to the Capitol on the 27th.
Take it away, Ted Granger.
we're really excited about Senior Day. This is our second one. And I just, you know, there are some real misperceptions about our senior population. One of the biggest ones, and there's a lot of data on this. AARP came out with a study last year showing that most people feel like we have to pay, there's so many services that we have to provide to seniors that they're a drag on the economy. But the reality is that they contribute more to our economy and put more money into our economy and help build jobs in our economy more than any other population. So we're excited about Senior Day and hope to help raise awareness about those issues.
You know, and that's a good point too, Jack Levine, that it's not just standing in line with your hand out before the lawmakers saying, please, please include us in the budget. We need money. It is public policy. It is issues that transcend the monetary part of this.
Well, you know, it's about family. You know, demography is destiny, and we have added a generation in this last generation. You know, when I was growing up in the 1950s, there were children, parents, and grandparents. Our grandparents were the oldest people we knew. And now we've got super elders, and the two-thirds of all 75-year-olds who have ever been alive in the United States are alive today. So this amazing surge of this population, yes, there are some needs, but as Ted accurately says, there are also some great opportunities, and those are engagement and mentoring and creating more community gardens and opening up our doors to folks who are willing and able to learn new exercises. You know, we have a great partner in the Florida Sports Commission, and they run senior games all over the state. And we're talking about great achievement. So I think we have to not only honor our parents, but honor our grandparents and our great-grandparents in a state like Florida. I didn't want to miss an opportunity, though, while we have our listeners' attention to really honor our media, too. You know, when it comes down to it, Tom, you and your colleagues, print, broadcast, they uncover, you guys discover what we need to know, and the depth and the breadth of coverage really is a motivator. It's a motivator for us as advocates, but sometimes there's bad news, it's a motivator for public policy to make reforms. And, you know, there are those who, you know, like to bash the media and call you all kinds of negative names. But I think, you know, we have a concert who say, we need you, we want you, we want access to the information that is necessary. And that is the way we reform. That's how we reformed civil rights. That's how we got things going in terms of care for elders and children. So, you know, kudos to the media. And for every lick you take from somebody who probably doesn't know very much about the real workings of our system, you know, I want to lead the charge for compliments, and we need to do that, and we need to write letters to the editor, and we need to provide op-eds and meet with our reporters, because that impact is multiplied. It's one of the most cost-effective megaphones for advocates is good work with the media, and thank you and your colleagues for doing that good work.
That's deeply appreciated, Jack, and we thank you for that. But that's also a good motivator for folks to not ignore the new media that is out there right now. And Lord knows there are enough scurrilous YouTube comments and Facebook postings to last you more than a lifetime. But if you can add rather than detract from the discussion and the civility of that discussion when you go online, and whether it's talking about seniors and children's issues or presidential politics or whatever, it's something we all need to keep in mind, even those of us who do this kind of for a living is just remember there is a higher purpose out here than just what trips my particular trigger when I didn't get my cup of coffee this morning. Lord knows there's too much of that. Let's speaking of friendly voices, hey, George, Happy New Year and welcome to Perspectives.
Well, Happy New Year to you, Tom. And, you know, it's good to hear, even though I've never met you, my good friend Jack Levine, who's done so much for people. You know, he's mostly revered as doing things for children, but I have to extend that to say that he's done a lot of things for people, and it doesn't make any difference who they are. He's done it. And, you know, I'm getting ready to retire in August, at the end of August. So, you know, I'm going to be wanting to fight for causes like make sure that people who are disabled have what they need to do their jobs. You know, goodness knows that there's been a lot of ADA stuff that has been ignored in this, you know, by some people in this state and whatnot. And I'm going to be wanting to fight for causes for those people.
George, you claim you're retiring, but you know you're transitioning to a new level of achievement and activism. So don't give us this rocking chair rap, okay? Because we're not buying it.
Hey, Jack, you know, you do so much for people. And, you know, with people like you and my good friend Michelle Ray Winkle Vasalinda, I don't think I'm going to be allowed to sit around.
Well, George, I can think of a few advocates who will be more effective than you, especially down there at the Capitol. You'll eat them up, man. You really will.
Okay, Tom. Well, it's good to talk to you guys. And Jack, it's always good to hear you because you're always fighting for people's causes. And as long as I've known you, you know, without having met you in person, it's something that you have always done and will always continue to do. And I'm sure Ted and the other gentleman that's with you are going to continue to do their thing as well.
Well, thank you so much, George. It's always great to hear from you. And we'll catch you around the Capitol there, old buddy. You know, this is what I'm thinking also in terms of these coalitions and these marshaling of other resources to bring all of this to a greater thing. In the 21 years, Jason Zaborski, since you've been doing the Children's Day, this has been a growing kind of thing. You now have a huge coalition on this issue and a growing coalition on the seniors issue now too.
Absolutely. I mean, and the event is designed for that. It's a collaborative event. We're really trying to bring you know, the many different groups together. And actually, Children's Week, when it started, was designed with one voice for children, so that everyone did come together, that we weren't fighting over the scraps of what was left over from the budget, and we came together with one voice early on to talk about what the needs of children are in this state. And I think, you know, we have seen it grow every single year. We add new partners. We're up to, I think, 132 partners this year for Children's Week. When I first started it 10 years ago, we had about a dozen. So we've grown tremendously. We've you know, done it collaboratively. Every partner that works together with us, organizations, volunteers, all has a big role in the success of this event, and believing that it can make a difference when decisions are being made at the state capitol and their voice can be heard. And I really do believe that telling those stories is the biggest thing, because, you know, you can talk about numbers, you can talk about budgets, but when, you know, like for instance, you know, Senator Gardner, you know, he's seen this firsthand, and this is the reason why he's passionate about these issues, and that's what's going to make a difference in those legislative decisions and policies that are passed here in the state.
Are you saying the personal drives the political?
Yes, and the persuasion is really heartfelt. Ted mentioned earlier, very quickly, Tom, the Children and Youth Cabinet. This is a construct. It's statutory. It's set up by the legislature, and it is the convening place of all the key state leaders whose professional lives touch the world of children. Mike Carroll, the Secretary of DCF, and Christy Daly of DJJ, and Commissioner Pam Stewart, and Dr. Armstrong with health. They meet together. It's not about meeting. It's about continuity and conversation about what's next. And we're going through a revisiting of something that Jason mentioned earlier, which is the Florida Youth Commission. I'm proposing in Monday's meeting that we change to Florida Youth Leadership Commission so that we bring together those are the organizations that have a stake in not only public policy, but in civic engagement and advocacy for the skills and strategies of advocacy to be shared with our young people. And I think that's the way to go. The cabinet will have a period of time to plan this, but we're going to ask everyone to get part of the team and let's have a new generation of young people, whether they've been foster kids or not, whether they've been delinquent kids or not, whether they've been special needs kids or not, and realize that our seats will be filled by them at some point sooner than later. And we might as well get them ready for the new challenges of the new century.
414-1234 to call into Perspectives. And Kanal is giving us a line right here. I hope I got that pronunciation right, sir.
You did right. Thank you so much for giving me an opportunity. And the reason I'm calling is, first of all, I want to congratulate Ted Granger and his team for doing an amazing job. Recently, I got my hands on a report, air report, that they created. A lot of they have done a thorough job in researching and putting out a lot of numbers and detail into public domain, which talks not only about just the personal issues, but, you know, how our the middle-class family, which we not always see in public domain, talking about the day-to-day problems that they face. And on top of that, if they have someone, a child in a family who needs special attention, or our seniors that we're talking about who need special attention, I mean, it just beyond money, it goes into a lot of ways in our life and day-to-day life. So I encourage everyone to get their hands to those reports, whether you are an educator provider or medical provider or someone like me, like a financial service provider. We need to know that. And thank you so much for Ted and their team for doing that great job. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you very much for the call, Kanal. I really, really appreciate that too.
Yeah, thanks very much, Kanal, and thanks for bringing that up. Last year, the United Way came out with a study called ALICE, and that's an acronym that stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained, Employed. Many people think United Way, and many people think that the services that government provides really help those who are below the poverty line and who may not be working, et cetera. The fact is in Florida, as the ALICE study shows, 45% of our population statewide struggle to pay their monthly bills, and 25% of those folks are employed. And that the report shows how in transportation, housing, food, and in a couple of other areas, what the cost, the actual cost of living in each county in the state of Florida is, and what people are actually making. I encourage folks to go to the United Way of Florida website, uwof.org, to access that study and look for it. We do have a legislative initiative that's focused on this year, Floridians leave $1 billion in tax refunds on the table in Washington each year. And we have an initiative asking the legislature for $1.2 million to expand free tax preparation services for working poor Floridians so that we can draw down some of those $1 billion, hopefully about $40 million. We know that the earned income tax credit is the number one tool, many studies show, to help bring people out of poverty. And we can bring millions of dollars down in EITC refunds to working families to help them climb out of poverty. And we're looking for support on that this
year. Yeah, do not leave that money on the table for crying out loud.
No kidding.
In the few moments we have left, Jack Levine, I think a very apt creed that you wanted to bring to the table.
Yes, Tom. You know, this intergenerational emphasis of the weeks ahead, there's an advocate's credo that we use in our networking and advocacy work, and it goes like this. It's, "Thou art my child, my parent, and my elder. I love thee best, but could not love thee half as much, loved I not all the rest." It's not just four lines of poetry. It's measuring the love we have for our own, however we define that, by that which we're willing to do for others. And that's really the purpose of Children's Week and Senior Day and our collective efforts.
And Jason Zaborski, one more time here, the actual dates and a couple highlights here in the moment we have left.
Sure. Children's Week, January 26th, runs from 8:30 to 2 p.m. So come out for a lunch break. Come out in the morning for a coffee and see all the festivities happening. Our town hall meeting will start at 10:30 in the governor's cabinet room. So please tune in to that and come up to the Capitol. And then Senior Day, January 27th, Wednesday, during the week. So make your plans to come up to the Capitol starting in the morning. We start at 10 o'clock with our town hall meeting and have a series of entertainment activities, health screenings, information booths, and go meet with your legislators while you're up there and make sure that they know you're there and that you care.
Jason Zaborski, Children's Week and Senior Day Coordinator. Ted Granger, President, United Way of Florida. And, of course, Jack Levine, founder of Four Generations Institute and Coordinator. Thank you guys so much for being here today on Perspectives.
Thanks, Tom.
Perspectives produced by WFSU-FM in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox. Lydell Rawls on the phones and email machine today. And I'm Tom Flanagan. Invite you to join us again next week when Perspectives focuses on the future of Innovation Park and other economic development projects under the auspices of the Leon County Research and Development Authority. We will talk more of that.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.